This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 118, Black Hat Car Hacks.
Hello and welcome to yet another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, one of your co-hosts here at GamesAtWork.biz, and I'm joined today by my co-host and friend, Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael.
Hey. This is episode 118.
Huh? 118?
118.
Ooh, look at that. That's quite a number of episodes.
Yes. Matter of fact, it's like going 118 miles an hour.
It is. And we've got a show for you today. We're going to be talking about driving and cars and talk and coffee and dogs and all kinds of stuff. So shall we jump right into it? Or shall we, tease people even more?
Hey, coming back after this break, we'll be talking about...
Stay right there. Don't go. So let's get right into it. One of the things that I was really eager to chat a little bit about today was celebrating the Americans with Disabilities Act. I was looking through the iTunes store. It's a major anniversary. And one of the apps kind of caught my eye, so to speak. And
it's the 25th anniversary, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the apps is an app called Be My Eyes. And Be My Eyes is an app that allows for crowdsourcing to help people who have limited vision be able to see through a remote video connection. So the screenshot examples, I mean, it's super easy to get, is an example that says, hey, here's two cans. They're both look and feel the same. Which one of the cans has tomatoes in it? And it's a picture or a video feed of coconut milk on one side and tomatoes on the other. And you could say it's the one on your right. So that way you're making a spaghetti sauce instead of a nice Thai dish. So I thought this was rather incredible as a way to leverage mobility services and crowdsourcing to connect in real time people who are willing to help in one way or another and with people who might need some help in one way or another. I thought it was really, really clever.
Yeah, I seem to remember hearing about this app some time ago, and I thought it was kind of cool too. I mean, the ability to, you know, if you're legally blind, to have somebody else help you see things that you can't necessarily see. Now, you know, there's all kinds of things that pop into my mind just because of the way that I'm wired, right? It's like, okay, does it show the person where you're at, right? What are the privacy capabilities around it? What's the you know, other than the positive feeling for helping out another human being, what's the benefit for you as a player to help somebody out? And I see they've got like a point system involved mm-hmm. in here, and some things of that nature. You know, are there tie-ins with, I mean, shoot, just pick something, you know, you get a Starbucks card when you hit 5,000 points or something like that. Some way to not only make people feel good and help each other out, but also reward the system some too.
Yeah, I have not downloaded the app. I will. It was just something that came across this morning. But reading the reviews and just give some nice examples of the positive karma effects at the very minimum that you're able to see. One commenter here says, I love this app. Use it for the first time. My seeing eye dog had an allergy flare up on the left side of her left paw. You know, I got some help from somebody in Australia. There's someone from Korea helping me as well. It was just really, really nice so that there could be something positive and easy for people helping people. And this, the gamification aspects of the points and the leaderboards and how many people have helped from an analytics point of view does sound interesting, but there's probably a lot more to be part of the network. So I'm going to give it a shot and we'll see how this works. Maybe I'll get some experience in it too.
Yeah, it'd be cool. It'd be neat to have you come back, in a couple of weeks, or let's be more accurate, in a couple of shows, because our summer schedule has been very disjointed.
Well, it's been summery.
Yeah.
But luckily, we are the ones that are in control of our schedule and when we record and find ways to do stuff. But that's not always the case, as we were learning from some articles from Wired and Fortune and others, where drivers find that other people are in control.
Yeah, this is really interesting. And as we've talked about on the show in the past, I spent some time working in the connected vehicle space. Mm-hmm. And I remember a couple of years back, there was a big thing. A couple of researchers had put up a video right before Black Hat. That's what, next week or the week after. It's coming up really soon.
Very soon, yes.
To showcase off some analysis that they did, where they were able to take control of a vehicle. Now, the way they did that is they basically ripped open the dash of the car, and they plugged in their laptop, and they were sitting in the front seat of the car, and they were actually, the one guy was in the back seat and the other guy was in the front seat and somebody else was driving, and they were just playing with signals on the CAN bus, and that was impacting the driver. And the auto industry at the time was like, hey, yeah, that's great, but that's because you have physical access to the vehicle, and you might as well think of it, once someone steals your laptop
and your
left
car.
It logged in, right, and left it logged in, well, the fact that they could get access to all your data on your laptop is just the fact that they have your laptop and it's logged in.
Right.
So using that parallel, they were saying, once you have the car and you're sitting inside of it and, X, Y, and Z, then of course you can do all that stuff. So this is not a big threat. Well, to me, that was kind of like a challenge, right? You get a researcher and you say, yeah, that stuff you discovered, not very important. We don't care. Tell us about when you can do it from remote. Well, it's 2 years later now and they can do it from remote.
But tell us how. How do they do it? They're 10 miles away. What do they do?
It's actually really interesting, because around the same time, there was also another hack that they were showing from another set of researchers who had taken a Windows Media audio file on a CD, put it in the media player, and then used that to reprogram part of the car that then gave them remote access. This was a couple of years ago.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, right. So. Now forward to now, and you've got many vehicles on the road. I won't say most or all, but many new vehicles will have some kind of telematics system attached to the car. And that system usually has some kind of, mobile device built into the car. There's lots of different companies that make these, and those are roaming IP addresses, right? So there's a gateway attached to the car, and it's an IP address. So these researchers discovered the make and model of those on the car, and they discovered the IP address for the specific vehicle that they wanted to hack. And they uncovered that the gateway on that mobile device was connected to the infotainment system, and there was a rewritable firmware component within the infotainment system. So being smart technical geeks, they said, that entertainment system is also on the CAN bus. So if I could rewrite the privileges on that firmware, I can do more than it was supposed to. So what they did is they took that IP address and pushed a firmware update to the infotainment system, rewrote it, and gave it privileges to access the CAN bus. So at this point, it's just like they put a wire attached to the CAN bus and are sitting in the car, and they can do everything they were able to do in the past. So this included controlling the brakes, controlling the steering when backing up. And really, if you think about it, a lot of modern cars will have parking assist capabilities for like pulling into a parallel parking space. So that's when you need the steering when backing up, and that would be programmable, right? Because it's electrical signals that control the steering for that. So they did that. They took over the radio. They rewrote the video display on the radio to show pictures of the people hacking the car. They started playing sounds. I mean,
spraying,
you know,
the windshield,
messing with
wiper
the
fluid.
Windshield wiper yeah. fluid and the windshield wipers, etc. And you know, that's bad enough from a technical perspective. But the reporter from Wired Magazine, who was with them to test this out, allowed them to do that while he was driving 70 miles an hour down a public road. So,
yeah, it was
that
Interstate
wasn't very
64.
Bright. Yeah, that wasn't so, very bright.
No.
And so, if you look at the video, they actually show him driving down. You got the video cameras in there. You see his reactions in the car. You see stuff going on outside the car. There's probably like a GoPro or something mounted on one side of the car. He is in traffic doing this stuff. So really, really not bright. But it does, you know, make the case that now the vehicle, under certain conditions, is hackable by remote.
Yeah, so I mean, but to me, this is absolutely. I was going to say mind blowing, but then on the flip side, it's not. I mean,
no,
when you think
not.
About it, it really isn't. You've got a network of computers. When you compromise one, that provides now the opening to compromise more, and off you go. Right, so yeah. you start with playing very loud music, and then you end up in a ditch.
Right. Well, the funny thing is, I mean, the modern cars now have between, depending on which number you look at, it's like between 30 and 100 CPUs in them. So the modern car is a network of things. And once you're on that network, whether physical access when you're in the vehicle or remote access through an IP address, it's the same thing, right? But, you know, that again is when you think about security problems, that again is a one for one. I found the IP address for that one car and I do something to that one car. But wait, there's more. So
how many cars are vulnerable to this, right? I mean,
I'm gonna take you even further than that. So the same day, another group of researchers in the UK released an article. I saw it the next day, where they did a similar hack, but instead of coming in through the modem, right, through the cell phone that's built into the car. Are you familiar with something called DAB? D-A-B?
No.
This is the digital, or I think it's called digital audio broadcast system in mm-hmm. the UK. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, you're listening to the radio and it pops up and says, you are on BBC One. They're playing, you know, Billy Joel, right? Or whatever, right?
Right.
It's that text information that comes across on the display.
Ah, yes, of course.
In your infotainment system, right?
Okay. Yep.
Your car has it, right? Well, that is a broadcast signal. And, you know, there's millions of cars on the road that it can accept that broadcast signal. Now, they don't go through as much detail on this one, but basically there is a vulnerability in interpreting that signal. So the way I read this, you know, one of the big security flaws that people exploit when they're writing malware is something called a buffer overrun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So I'm guessing, just from what I gleaned in the article, that this is a buffer overrun problem where they take the buffer that displays that DAB message,
right,
overrun the end and use it to rewrite firmware on the car.
Wow.
So now I can broadcast, you know, pick a popular station and a popular time of day, send a broadcast on the DAB. And now I don't get one car. I get hundreds or thousands of cars, that even if I just, you know, send something in that then causes it to ping back as a remote, now I can have the IP address.
Right.
And of now the car, you, maybe now the make and model it. Or whatever. Yep. And now I can do everything else. So,
and you should be able to determine the location too, wouldn't you? Via the GPS unit of the car.
Absolutely. So you start thinking about this and you see that while you may claim everything is working as designed, there's obviously a problem with test here. there's a system of systems problem where people haven't thought through, here's something that's traditionally non-connected. Now it is connected. What does that mean? What are the implications for how the system holds together? Where are the new attack surfaces that opened up that somebody can take advantage of? What I need to think about that. I mean, a lot of this, I was talking to a guy yesterday, who is a security expert, and a lot of this stuff could be easily fixed. I mean, we have these same types of problems on web pages, and we solved that, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. There are certain tests that you do to make sure that, you know, you don't have buffer overflows or cross-site scripting or yada, yada, yada. And all of those are standard practices in traditional IT development or web development. Well, now the car in this example is just another thing on the web. And those practices need to really quickly get instantiated in the development practices.
So when you think about Internet of Things style hubs, connected home, connected car, that all fits the same bill then, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It really isn't hard to think through what would happen if you don't think about what could happen.
My internet connected toothbrush is now doing more than just brushing teeth. It's drilling.
Yeah, well, I think you and I talked about this, right? There's multiple internet connected toothbrushes out there, and some of them have Wi-Fi, and unless they have their firmware locked down, you could be at a hotel, which is an open Wi-Fi spot. It connects to the Wi-Fi there looking for updates to be pushed to better brush your back molars. And somebody sends a software update and flashes the toothbrush, which now has a vulnerability on it. So when you go home, it connects up to your home network, which then broadcasts out to a command and control server and opens up your home network.
But I'm bump.
Can you tell I've been thinking about this one?
Just a little bit. So it's right in line with the importance of security, right? I mean, all the conveniences and all these improvements that we've been taking, not really for granted. I mean, in some ways, they're magical and they are exactly where technology is driving us, are providing a series of exploits that unless the right steps are taken, and most of those steps, as you said, are known, right? They're not new invention. Right. They're known steps. Can create scenarios where the unintended consequences are not what is desired by anybody.
Yes.
Wow. Very, 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 very cool.
Cool in that kind of really bad way.
So I guess for those people who want to go full on Luddite, we should be thinking about how old of a car do you need to be driving to be immune to such vulnerabilities?
Wow. So these ones that they've been talking about in the last week are fairly new cars. They're all within the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I think it's like 2012. So the interesting thing is, though, more and more cars are going to have this going forward, right? So unless the general practice changes on how they're tested and how the software is developed and how the systems of systems are architected together. From here forward, you need to think about it. And in the automotive, if you go back to the hack from 2 years ago, right, 2+ years ago, I think that one came in through the dash, but it could come in through something like the OBD2 port. And that was mandated on all cars in 1996 for the US market. So if you get yourself a nice 1957 Chevy with the big fins on the back, you might be okay. or a 1940s pickup truck with three windows in the back.
Or a bicycle.
Or a bicycle. Except there are connected bicycles now, too.
Ah, that's true. E-bikes.
Yeah, and E is the sound that you scream as the chain falls off.
Oh, how incredible. Hey, you know, if we think about not just the terrestrial, but the extraterrestrial side, there have been some exciting things in the space area too, as of late. Very exciting pictures coming back from Pluto. Super exciting things I've seen you've been tweeting about in the recent last couple of weeks about the space sail deploying, functioning properly and actually sending back, and
that one's actually done, right? I mean that mission ran pretty quick. The light sail project, the Pluto stuff, interesting thing, right? To talk about connected devices for a second. Not only is there a 4.5, I think, hour delay one way on communicating between ground control and the spacecraft that just flew by Pluto.
Yep.
The modem speed on that, I'm trying to remember that. I think it's a 600 baud modem. I mean, it's unbelievably slow. So even though the flyby is long since done now, for the next year and a half, they're going to be sending data back.
Yeah.
Just to get all the data that was captured in the couple of days of the flyby.
You got to wonder how that data is prioritized.
Right now, it should be dump it all.
Well, sure, but it's going to take, like you said, a year and change for it all to come back to the Earth and be received. I just wonder what algorithm there was to process and prioritize what data comes back, which pictures come first, which ones come later, or if it's a first in, first out sort of thing.
Oh yeah, good point. I have no idea.
I have no idea either. Just wondering about space stuff because it's interesting to wonder about.
And then yesterday there was a NASA announcement from the what is it, the Kepler mission of a new Earth-like planet discovery.
Ooh, where? What star system?
I will find that link and put it in the show notes. Let me see. It was on. I saw it on the web this morning. I will. Actually, I'm sure the Planetary Society has it. It was. Turn off all these over pop-ups. Oh man, I can't remember the name of the site. The name of the mission. I will find it and put it in the show notes. But it's, I think, obviously in the Milky Way. I want to say it's within the same habitable zone, i.e. Goldilocks zone. It rotates it around its sun. I want to say like once every 385 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it is less than 50% larger than the Earth. So it's really interesting stuff. I mean, we're now talking about yet another planet that could be
potentially life supporting, right?
Exactly.
Carbon-based forms like ours, life-supporting. Wow.
Well, yeah. That's a good way of putting it. But I will try to find that link and put it in the show notes because it's one that I want to put in the show notes.
So what have you been playing, Michael? What games?
I have been playing a game called Tiny Keep, and what this is. Is a generated dungeon, kind of like if you remember the early Diablo game.
Yes.
So it generates a dungeon. You're a dude. You wake up. You find yourself in the dungeon. Your captors are gone. The door is unlocked, and you have to figure out how to get out.
Mm-hmm.
It's 20 levels. I think I'm on level 3 or 4 now. And it's kind of cool because you got to find a sword, you got to find a shield, you have to find keys on the level in order to get to the next level. You can, discover things, that, you collect coins and use the coins to level up your weapon or get special abilities, etc. And it's just kind of fun, little mindless little adventure game.
Nice. Yeah, I'm taking a look at it right now.
Yeah,
You know, I've been playing some of the stuff I've been playing for a while. So I've really liked the Alto game where you are on your snowboard and snowboarding down this endless runner sort of mode. And I just unlocked the llama who sits on a snowboard and kind of goes through, which is kind of fun. And I've been playing Crossy Road too a bit. So that's been nice to see some of the new things that have come out there, the new characters and the like, which is also the endless Frogger-esque kind of game of getting your animal as far forward as possible. So just a little bit of thing, a little bit of game here and there, and that's about it.
Cool. And yeah, I'm kind of stuck on Alto, right? I can't get a run going good enough to do the triple backflip.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's the last thing I need to do to get to the next level.
And you use the wingsuit.
Yep.
Do one backflip, turn on your wingsuit, flip, triple backflip. Keep going.
Okay.
Easy peasy.
Guess I need to play it some more. Easy peasy. Well, I think that's all we have for the show this week.
Yes.
We want to say thank you to everybody for all their feedback that they send in. It is much appreciated and helps us decide what we want to talk about on the show. And we look forward to getting more from you.
Yeah, and I'll share what I find from the Be My Eyes app, too, as we go forward. That looked like a lot of fun.
Cool.
Alrighty. Well, with that, we should say, see ya!
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.